Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
Me, Ben Hobson.
And me, Jane Maguire.
Today we're looking at the lure of impossible races. Have you ever taken part in a challenge that you think is impossible when you started off?
I think that most races, when you're getting ready to do one, seem impossible. I know we're going to talk about the Barclay Marathons in a bit with Damien, and that's, you know, the very much like the tip of the big ultra iceberg of like incredibly impossible things to do. But I think that's the great thing about running, is that it just sometimes it seems impossible, but you still go ahead and do it. And I think that's like that transcends all distances, perhaps from 5k all the way through to these big ultras that are just like, well, I wasn't able to do it before and now I can. Or, you know, it's that sort of, that it is always it is possibly impossible. So I think that's sometimes why run into that. But to answer your question, I think Wings for Life was probably the one that was the most sort of seemingly impossible, because it's based on just running for as far as you can. Whereas most races you get, and that's probably a mindset thing. Yeah, that's okay. Not really anything to do with ability or things like that, but it's more, there isn't a finish line until you're caught. It's very, and it immediately feels different. Like there's more pressure.
Yeah.
And it just suddenly becomes like, oh, I don't want to get caught. Oh, wow, I don't want to get caught. I need to go. Right, but I've got to manage this effort because I want to go further, but not fast. Oh, God, this is impossible. I'm going to get caught. And then, you know, that was the one race which I did, which I was a bit like, wow. I was also in Japan, so I was pretty lucky. Like that was, so it was a pretty bizarre experience in general. So, yeah, that did feel quite impossible, I would say. But I did it, and, you know.
What about you, Jane?
I don't know. When I was thinking about this at first, I must have been about 16 or 17, and I signed up for my first 10K. And my dad's been a runner forever, and he hates the 10K distance. He hates it. He says, 5K is fine, but a 10K is just horrible. He said, what distance is it as you get into it? And he just hates 10Ks. So I remember thinking, oh my God, it's going to be impossible. Like, what am I doing? Why have I signed up for a 10K? And he was just so like, oh, it's a horrible distance. And it felt really impossible. I remember standing there thinking, oh, I can't do it then, because he doesn't like it. And he obviously could do it. He just didn't like it. He doesn't like the distance. We'll have to get him on to find out more. I've not really explained it well. He just doesn't like 10Ks. And that felt impossible. And I think, I don't know, thinking back now, I almost like that story, because I'm like, oh, it's nice to remember a time when, you know, for some of our listeners that will feel impossible, and you know with the right training you get there. And I agree with what Ben says, that day you sign up, the race feels impossible. And I think that's the joy of training, isn't it? That gradually, week by week, hopefully it stops feeling as impossible. But then more exciting is probably doing, it wasn't a race, it was like a run in Utah on the salt flats, where it was very, I think I've spoken about it on the podcast, where it was very like, run for as far as your mind wants you to run. And for me, I was like, oh, I'll just do like 10 minutes then.
Yeah, perfect. But yeah.
I think I ran for about an hour and a half. And then it was just this weird constant, like, there's no markers. There's no one telling me to stop. There's no one really around me. Like, you're just, you don't really know what pace to run. You're just running. And it sounds similar to Ben's kind of race. That it's, I think sometimes it's for me, I need structure. I need someone to tell me how fast to run. I need to see other people. I need to see mile markers. And when you just say, oh, just go for a run, I found that really mentally confusing and challenging. So that kind of felt a bit impossible while I was doing it.
What about you, Rick?
Me and my best mate, George, signed up for just really off the back of like mainly reading Born to Run. You know where this is going, right? So we were like, oh, great, yeah, we're all born to run. We'll have a go at the North.
We were both barefoot.
Yeah. We signed up for this is the North Downs 50. And we'd never done we hadn't done a marathon before this. I think we did one 10K or something. So it was a massive punt. And it really wasn't how you ought to go about things. And I think we did a couple of, I remember doing the course over two different times. So doing 25 miles and then going home and then doing 25 miles. And both times it was like, couldn't have done another step. So I remember getting to that start line. I think I was with my mum because I'm really cool. She drove me there. And I was like, I don't really would give myself like 50% chance of finishing this. Like, and that's not just sort of like, that wasn't sort of false modesty. That was just like, honestly, I reckon I've got like a 50% chance of of completing it. But it does give you, I tell you, it really, it's a great motivator, I think. If you think it's something's really at the limit of what you can do, like that little, like a bit of fear, I think actually.
Oh, yeah.
It's actually really motivating. And so I think, as you say, yeah, when you kind of start these challenges off, if it has a little bit of that for you, if it feels like very much at the far end of what you're capable of, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, I'm doing the London Triathlon, and that feels a bit impossible at the moment because I don't like riding my bike that much.
Right. Yeah.
I think I'll be all right on the swim. I hope I'll be all right on the run. Yeah. It's still a 10K, soz dad. But the swim, the swim I'll be fine. It's just the bike bit. I'm like, oh.
But that's good, Jane, isn't it? Yeah, because you're going into that kind of out of your comfort zone, which is kind of like where real challenges lie.
Yeah, that's why I signed up for it, because I was like, I don't know if I want to run. I signed up for it when the world was normal, obviously. And I was like, I don't know if I want to do another marathon just now. So let me do something that feels a bit different, a bit scary. And it kind of still does. I haven't really had a chance to train properly yet because of lockdown. But at the moment, it's still on. So I better get swimming and cycling.
A little bit of fear, that's what you need. So we're going to talk about the Barclay Marathon with Damien in a minute, because that probably is the most impossible race of all. I was doing a little bit of Googling, and I think since 1984 is when it started, there's only been 15 finishers, or 15 times people have finished, and a few people have finished twice. But it's not good odds if you're on that start line for your chances of finishing.
It's really not.
But this is, you know, I think this is what people want. You know, there's always the next biggest thing. There's the next bigger thing. And I think that once you've gone through, you know, you've done your marathons and then you do your first ultra and then you do this and then you do this. And then you're amongst you're amongst company of the same people who've got the same, marathons, no way. I do 100 miles now. And you're on and you're through and you're through. And then you're just going to get to the point where you need a race that is really impossible to finish, just to stop, just to stem the tide of people going, what's the next big thing, you know? And obviously there's like multi-day stuff that's like probably bigger and harder, really, like, you know, running across America.
Yeah.
Or something like that, you know, where you get these things. But for like a one-off
one big effort
thing,
yeah,
there still needs to be that, there needs to be that benchmark of just being like, this is not, the likelihood of me doing this is slim to none. And that's important.
Yeah, and that's this race, isn't it, for most people? You know, it's kind of yeah, like you say, it's as close to being impossible as you can get within, I guess. I mean, you're kind of saying this, but aren't you? Like, you can always make things harder. So you could say, the Barclay, I'd really like everyone to hop it. Could everyone hop rather than run? That'd make it harder.
Yeah.
And if you could hold your breath as well while you're doing it. Like, you can take these things to the point of ridiculousness, can't you?
Can you do some Googling? Give us some statage.
About the Barclays?
Yeah.
Okay. I've done some Googling. And yeah, so Barclay Marathon proved impossible again this year. So no one finished again. I think that's 3 years in a row now they haven't finished. It's essentially 100 miles held each March in Frozen State Head Park in Tennessee, and consists of 5 laps, which must be completed within 60 hours. And there were various cut-off times after each lap as well. It is the brainchild of Gary Lazarus Lake Cantrell. And he came up with the idea upon hearing in 1977 about the escape of James Earl Ray, who was the assassin of Martin Luther King, who was being held in the nearby Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary, and Ray covered a mere 8 miles in 55 hours before being recaptured. So I think Lazarus Lake was like 55 hours, and you covered 8 miles. It's not particularly quick. He felt like he could have covered 100 miles in that time. So that is where he came up with the race and said, right, in 60 hours, can you cover 100 miles in this same really brutal landscape? Yeah, and since 1986, it's been completed 18 times by 15 different runners, but most years, no one finishes at all.
I like that there's kind of no... It was just like, oh, I could do 100. It's literally like me saying, oh, Rick, I could do 100 laps of Clapham Common in 10 minutes. And you've been like, okay, bring it on. And yeah, it's just like there's no science here. There's literally no science.
Yeah, you're right. It's kind of like, it's just kind of whimsy, isn't it? Like, oh, I probably could do 100 miles there. That's what it will be then.
Yeah, but I could do 100. Okay, yeah, let's make that a race. But it doesn't he start it by lighting a cigarette or something? It's all very like bizarre.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, he blows a conch when people don't finish.
That's it.
And you when you tap out, which is, you know, when you if you finish a loop and you're like, I am done, you just tap out, right? And then you're out of the race and the conch is blown. And yeah, it's quite sort of Lord of the Flies-y, I think, you know.
Yeah, that's really true, mate.
So it's quite sort of, I think that's what makes it so brilliant, is it's just a bit weird. And there's no sort of like standard issues, pick up your numbers at the expo. That doesn't happen. Yeah. So it's good. It's a bit weird and it's really, really hard.
Yeah. Well, should we get Damien on then?
Yeah, perfect.
Guest of the week. Here in the studio, guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete. Could be a physio or a complete unknown.
Obviously, the Barclay claimed another victory this year. It feels like a race that sort of transcended running a bit. I think a lot of people are talking about the race much more than maybe 5 years ago, and it seems to really captured the public imagination, this kind of seemingly impossible race. So I think like someone like yourself, Damien, who hasn't done the Barclay yet, but maybe you're sort of thinking about it, be interesting to know, kind of get an insight into the mind of the ultra runner and what it is about these seemingly impossible challenges that has a certain allure. So if we could start there, I mean, why do you think a race like this, a race with no prize money, you know, very little chance of success, has now become one of the most oversubscribed races in the world to run in? What is it about, what's wrong with us as runners that we're drawn to this sort of preposterously difficult race format like the Barclay?
Yeah, it's a fascinating question, or it is to me at least. To be fair, you tipped me off a little bit earlier saying this is what we're going to be talking about, hopefully giving me enough time to come out with some profound and witty answer to that, which I'm going to totally fail.
Well, that's why we've invited you on, Damien. Yeah, we've invited you on for that reason.
I'm possibly going to disappoint you as usual. If I can do a horribly, horribly clunky book plug here, I've been thinking about this a lot because I've got a book coming out called In It for the Long Run, coming out in May. And it did force me to look back at my journey in running and ultra running, which is only 10 years old, really. But I remember those first 2 or 3 years, I was just fascinated by what was possible, I suppose. So I did my first ultra and thought, wow, that was possible. And then straight away you think, well, maybe I could go a bit further and then a bit further. And then I was doing my first 100K and first 100 miles and doing the spine race. And I suppose I realized, and that sort of maxed out at around the Southwest Coast Path, which is 630 miles, which sort of took me 11 days. But even then I realized if my mind had been prepared for more, had wanted to carry on, I could have done, you know, people run across America, run around the world. I think the mental side of it is the huge fascination, the huge area to explore, because if mentally we're willing to go on, we want to go on, we're planning to go on, then we, in most circumstances, we can in some way, you know, even if we need to be a bit patched up and so on. And I think the Barclay is probably a natural progression it's not a natural progression, is it? Because it's so different to many other races, but it fits in that, you know, you've run 100 miles, so we know that's possible. We've done other long, tough races. So it naturally attracts people who have done tough things and are just intrigued as to whether they can do this extraordinary puzzle. Of course, it's clever that it keeps such a aura of mystery around it. Obviously, there's no website to go to sign up. It's quite difficult to get into, from what I've been told. So that adds some mystery. Thinking about it in more general terms, and this is going to sound pretty, I think this is going to sound really naff. I'm trying to think of a better way to say this, but I was trying to think about why I've loved ultra running so much. And I think some of it is because in sort of Western world, or at least my life, it's quite predictable and safe, you know, and there's something to be said for that. It's quite nice to feel safe. But sometimes maybe we're, you know, week by week, for me, maybe there's a little bit too much predictability and safeness. And these challenges, they're not, well, I'd say most ultra races or most running races aren't properly dangerous, but this one kind of is, because there's no there's no safety team whatsoever. There's no tracking. It seems like quite a few people want to put themselves into a situation where, not necessarily risk, but there'll be fear and doubt and tears, but hopefully triumph and just all the emotions, I suppose. And the Barclay Marathons is possibly, well, it is the hardest race that I've ever heard of. It definitely grabs, you know, the followers as well. What I love when it's on is everyone's obsessed with following it, but there's almost nothing to follow. There's no tracking. And just before we came on, I checked the best source of following it, as some people will have learned, is someone on Twitter called Keith Dunn. And he has 38,000 followers now. And I'm pretty sure that's 99% because of the Barclay. There's certainly a lot of interest in it.
It's amazing. His account, I mean, it's very like, he's not doing it a lot with the tweets, are they? They're very kind of matter of fact, aren't they? He's got short tweets about the Barclay. It's like 38,000 followers. Just Keith Dunn. He's the man. He's there. He's got the kind of front row ticket. So fair play to him. He's kind of cornered the market.
For the listeners out there who haven't read the in-depth breakdown on Runner's World or watched the YouTube documentary, how do you get in? Like, how do you get into this race and how did it start? And can you give us a bit more like of a background on the Barclay?
Well, both of those are, yeah, especially how it started is a wonderful story. There was a prison in that national park in Tennessee. Frozen Head State. Yes. And someone escaped one time. I might have to dash the Wikipedia page. But in basically the time he escaped, he didn't get very far at all. Like a shockingly slow distance. You'll catch me on the hop here. I'm just desperately scanning the page to see if I can see how far it was. But he didn't get very far. The terrain is very steep and muddy and lots of undergrowth and these spiky briars. Presumably he probably got lost and went around in circles a fair bit. So it's just really challenging terrain. And this year especially, we're reminded it can easily be very foggy at this time of year. So it could be all those things. And then a guy called Gary Cantrell, or Lazarus Lake as he prefers, he sort of saw this on the news and he was an ultra runner and he said to his mates kind of like, really, is that all? Is that as far as he could get? So he started dreaming up this idea of, of putting on a race to see if people could get further in a certain time, and dreaming up this loop, which is, you know, still totally unmarked. I think one of the things people love about the book is to prove you've been to certain points, you have to find books which are hidden sort of under rocks and in trees. And yeah, no course markings, very little help. No help is coming, I think, is one of the mantras people like. But as to how do you get into it? Yeah, that's another mystery. You know, the whole challenge starts there. So it is definitely a mental challenge as well. There's no website. There is John Kelly, who's the most recent finisher, my old buddy over in the next county in Somerset. He is the most recent finisher. He does have a blog, which gives you one or two clues or hints that you could pursue. But ultimately, yeah, most people don't know. Most people don't know how to get in.
Do you think that it's simply too hard? I mean, I don't think it is. I think it's really important that within all spheres of sport, be it running or anything else, there needs to be the ever boundary changing hardness of things need to be there, because otherwise it just becomes, you know, bit boring. But you know, is it going to get to a point where it's simply too hard and that no one ever finishing it ever is ever just going to be like, oh, come on.
Another year, no finishes still. Yeah.
Well, I think this is the third year, isn't it, without a finisher. What Lazarus Lake does apparently is every time someone finishes, he makes it a tiny bit harder for the next year. But we don't know what a tiny bit harder means to him. That might mean quite a lot harder. I mean, that's totally up to him, really. I think, you know, he might make it a tiny bit easier next time, but he might not. And then, like a lot of these things, the weather is a huge thing. I think some of seasoned Barclay observers, when they saw how foggy it was going to be this year, they kind of quite early on said, no one's going to finish. And no one finished a third loop this year, right? No, isn't it the worst year for a long time in terms of finishes?
Yeah.
Although there was a smaller field because of lockdowns and so on, and not many international runners could get there. But it's good to have it there because it's haunted me for a while, because when I'm lucky enough to do interviews and stuff, people always go, yeah, kind of well done on what you just did, but are you going to do Barclay? So it is seen as, this, the holy grail of kind of the most impossible things you can do. And it almost feels like most people who are on the start line, most of them seem to sometimes have the mindset of, well, I'll aim for a fun run, or at least one or two laps would be good. Like even these super tough people who get to the start line, possibly quite a few of them don't think they can do it either. So, it's great to have around, isn't it?
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, I think that's good. I guess the other side of that, if I was putting my health and safety hat on here, do you think there's anything about these sort of impossible challenges that's irresponsible? I mean, is there a worry that one year someone could push themselves, you know, too far in pursuit of the impossible, and you know, and could end up, you know, being seriously hurt as a result of races in this kind of format?
That's an intriguing one. I mean, I'm pretty sure when you sign up, you especially it being in America, I'm pretty certain you probably have to sign something saying, you know, it's not anyone else's fault but yours. And I'm guessing they vet people who enter to see that they've got some credentials. But it's still, I mean, I've done the spine race a couple of times, and even when I was turned into a total zombie in the snow in the middle of the night, falling asleep on my feet, I did know that I had a tracker on me, and I could press a button on it. I'd be out of the race, but someone would at some point come and find me and sort of rescue me. I did know that. And in the Barclays, there isn't there isn't that. Probably people don't know where you are at all. So is that good or bad? I think it's probably a better world if we do have some things like that, I suppose. But I guess just, you know, I can't imagine that many people who sign up. Well, actually, I'm going to backtrack on that. Apparently each year they have a sacrificial lamb. They have someone who's unofficially not well qualified for it. And they sort of chuckle at them behind their back, I think. And they rarely get a whole loop.
That's so horrible. Would that be like they put me on the start line and like, lol?
It basically says, someone who has absolutely no business in being there, you get the sacrificial lamb place. I mean, yeah, it's sort of, I mean, it's that kind of, it's a sort of dark humour to the Barclay, isn't it? It's that kind of running.
Yeah, because often the books that you have to find are often called things like, I don't know, 3 Days in Hell or Lost in the Woods. And yeah, I'd call that dark humour, yeah.
That poor person getting mocked by, do all the other runners know as well? Is it like everyone but them?
No, I don't think they do until afterwards.
I'm all for it. I think that's... you know, it's the responsibility of someone to do something, and you know they know the risks and all those sorts of things. I think that there's enough, not to be like, I'm not in any way against any form of health and safety. I think it's very important, but I also think that people should be able to go and put their lives at risk, I guess, if they want to do an insane race. It's kind of up to them, isn't it?
Yeah, and partly why I'm so in love with ultra running is that there are so many, just like the Spine Race, there are so many adventures you can have that are pretty safe. So you can really push yourself in a sort of almost mental, emotional way and physical way. But really, if you really overstep it, you know, and you misjudge things, then you are looked after. So there is lots of things you can do. I agree with you, Ben, definitely.
Have you ever entered a race or taken part in a challenge that you thought at the time on the start line it would be impossible to finish?
Oh, good question. I guess the first time I signed up for the spine race, which for those who don't know is 260 odd miles going up the Pennines in England in January. I guess I thought, no, I've got, if I thought it was possible, but unlikely, I suppose. There's a chance, but the odds are against me. And that was really appealing. That was really exciting. Like, I don't know if I can do this. Like, I think that's a wonderful place to put yourself in running, like, I don't, you know, like when we've all done, I don't know if we've all done marathons, but when you do a long distance for the first time, even a half marathon, you stand there and you don't know if you can do it. So it's all relative. Even that first park run for some people, I don't know if I can run 5K. I'm going to try though. I mean, that's a wonderful place to be, I think.
I think that's it. I think that the sort of the chat that we're having now about these races, which are basically that sensation on steroids, but running is, it has that for everyone. Like, you toe the start line of any race and you know you've probably done all the, you know, the right training that you think you should do, and you've done all the bits and pieces, but there's so much good luck based with a good race, and there's so much stuff that can go wrong. And it's like, it's actually that probably the main appeal of any race is really that sense of like, it could all come undone. It's not always possible that this will be the thing that happens. And I think that obviously when you get to the start line of 100 mile or, you know, something crazy like Badwater or I don't know, anything that's sort of like at the extreme of any of these situations, that risk of impossible becomes much more, you know, obvious. But I think that that's the great thing about running, is it's not always a given that it will happen.
Yeah, I've heard Lazarus Lake talk about the Barclay, and he thinks that perhaps even those races you're talking about, Ben, where you think, can I do it? Can I make it? If you actually look at what the finishing rates are of those races, often they're in, you know, 75% plus the amount of people finish, or even like something that has loads of that kind of chat, like tough guy events. You know, it's like a 95% finishing rate. And he says, actually, those things, your chance of finishing, you're actually extremely high with those things. That's not actually in his way, like in his mind, a proper challenge. Whereas the Barclays, actually, look at the finishing rate. All right, you've got like a 5% chance. This is a proper challenge. You probably won't be able to do it, but in attempting to do it, you're going to find out something about yourself that you possibly didn't know. And I think that's quite an appealing narrative with the Barclay, that he's actually set some like a proper challenge up.
Yeah, I guess that might be why it's so, why people care so much, because you see those pictures of like grown men crying on the floor, like, yeah, just like, wow, this is mad. Like, that maybe that's why the world seems to be obsessed with this kind of really exclusive tiny race, quite a long way away from where we're all talking.
Yeah, I heard another ultra runner talk about this, and he wasn't quite as effusive about the Barclay. He thought that actually there was potentially something gimmicky about these races, like the sense that they're so preposterously difficult that they become a little bit daft. And I think you could maybe argue the same thing about another race. Is it the Big Dog Backyard Ultra, which is like the last person standing? Do you think that in some ways, yeah, there is something slightly gimmicky about these races, and actually maybe you'd be better off trying to get a really good time in the UTMB? I mean, you've already done that, David. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. But I mean, could you substitute the word gimmicky for, I don't know, dark humor if we go back there? Like, some of these, I must admit, yeah, for now, mostly I prefer doing, I suppose, the big bad races. At the moment, I prefer those, but I can see how I would start to get attracted by the more sort of dark humor, gimmicky races. There was one in Britain that you may have heard of, Rick. It's only happened 3 or 4 times, but it was called the Piece of String Race.
I've heard of it.
And the whole idea was, you know, how long is it? Well, how long is a piece of string? You sign up for it and you don't know how long it is. And one year they even they bundled everyone in a minibus after about 10k and drove them to the other side of the country and then let them out again. And they'd give them like a map for 10 kilometers and then another map for 10 kilometers. And it would, they're only ever like the Barclay, they're always less than 20 people, I think. And it only happened a few times, but it was just the uncertainty, the mental thing of you not knowing, are you running for another 2 days or another 2 minutes, you know? And that's, you know, that messes with your mind hugely. I mean, that's...
Yeah, that's making me feel anxious now and I'm not even there.
the last man standing format is quite popular around the... Well, popular in very, very relative terms, but there are quite a lot of races like that now around the world now, actually. So it does appeal to some sort of people, you know, or some sort of mindset. It is intriguing, I think.
Do you think that actually finishing these races, not just the Barclay marathons, but finishing any of these big races, it's not necessarily, I mean, I'm asking because you've finished some of these and I guess that's kind of the end goal, but maybe it's not. Like, is it just getting to the start line is often the major thing, and maybe beating everyone else but not finishing? I mean, it's, you know, it sort of shifts the parameters of what's a good result, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, and I like I alluded to before, I do think with the Barclays sometimes, you know, to do a fun run, which is 3 laps, is really respectable. That's seen as having done really well. So I don't even know how many people on the start line think they're gonna finish, and understandably, because the stats are very much against them. But again, I think that could be the same of, you know, nearly any race. Like for a marathon, some people are there just to complete the distance, some people are there for a PB, you know, so some people want, you know, yeah, different, an age level category. So I guess you pick your challenge, you pick what appeals to you, I suppose.
I just think that most people who start a marathon would be absolute, like, you start a marathon, you would be gutted if you had to drop out halfway around. But I think you start the Barclay, and if you get halfway around, you're like number
result.
One. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like, that's kind of, there's the difference in the two events, is that not finishing is almost like a badge of honor. Whereas, you know, a DNF in something else isn't quite the same.
Mm.
Or is that just because I'm viewing it from a point of view of someone who would never, ever get near that start line of something, one of these ultras. But if you're actually there, then you're there to finish.
Yeah, no, it is a bit different. And I see people, you know, like John Kelly and Jared Campbell, who's had 3 finishes, but he was there again this year, and he was there the previous one as well and didn't finish. And I look up to them as absolute gods, really, but I suppose they're not finishing. I guess you'd have to ask them, or if I can ever get into the race, maybe have me back in a year or two, and maybe I'll be able to give you some insight. But it's interesting.
I've got it on good knowledge that Laz definitely listens to this podcast, so I'm sure you'll be getting a message after this.
Let me in, Laz, please.
Oh, it'd be great to see you doing it. I think last time you were on, we talked very, very briefly about, because there's a good bit of British history with the Barclay. The first ever finisher was a fairly unknown Brit. And have you done any digging, Damien, without giving everything away? Can you tell us anything about the first finisher?
No, I can't really. this probably isn't that fascinating to everyone else, but yeah, but me and you have had a little bit of interest in this guy, because Mark Williams in 1995. And he's almost sort of unheard of, although he did have some respectable results elsewhere. But maybe it's just because it's a little while ago now that most of us don't really know that much about it. So I'm intrigued to find out more, because the next time someone finished was 2001. And David Horton, the American who finished then, I've heard of him. And I think it was him that came out with the phrase, actually, it never always gets worse. Which I think is for ultra running in general, which I do use actually as a bit of a mantra in some races. You know, it's not necessarily going to get worse from here, which is, if that's as good as it gets, that can sum things up quite well.
That's actually the podcast. That's one of the podcast tenets.
But yeah, we need to know more about this Mark Williams guy, I think. And yeah, definitely. If I ever get into the Barclay, I might need to try and find out where he is and get his tips.
If you get in, will you come back on here and tell us how you got in? Will you reveal the secrets?
I don't know if I'm
no,
allowed.
You can't,
yeah,
you can't.
I don't know. I can't promise that. I can't promise that.
Sorry, listeners. I tried. I want to find out. Like, do you just get like a letter? Like, is it something? Do you get a book? Like, how do you find out?
There are clues scattered around, Jane, everywhere, like a secret language, like Elvish. I think you have to know Elvish to get in as well.
So you have, maybe it's like a language you learn doing ultramarathons, and Damien's just not telling us.
Yeah, that's what it is.
I can't comment.
No comment.
But it sounds like you would be interested in that, Damien, in having a go, if you could kind of decipher the clues and get on the start line, you'd be up for it.
I think I would. And it's partly because so many people keep asking me, you know, I'm sitting there thinking, I've just run the Pennine Way in one go on the fastest known timer. Oh, I'm exhausted, but I'm quite satisfied with that. And then someone always says, what about the Barclay? You haven't done the Barclay. So yeah, it is beginning to sort of haunt me. So, and Nick, you know, I've got a good friend, Nikki Spinks, has been out there. She's had a go. A few other friends as well. But yeah, John Kelly, or ex-friend John Kelly. Pavel Polonce, I know a little bit from the spine race. He was out there this year, actually. So I've got a few friends. And what's intriguing as well, almost everyone I know who's been out there wants to go straight back the year after as well, which is intriguing, isn't it? Because you think it must be hellish. But they all want to go back. So I guess I want to know what it is that makes them want to go back. Because when you see the films and you think that land, you know, the terrain looks horrible. You literally go under that old prison. You go under, like, it's almost like through the drains, like in the water under the prison. It's it's pretty horrible.
Well, no, we look forward to it. Damien, thanks so much for coming on the podcast and talking about the allure of these races like the Barclay. I think Ben, Jane, and I are hoping to get one of us can be the sacrificial lamb at some point, can't we? That'd be good.
Yeah, Rick, you can take that one.
Yeah, Rick, you've got pedigree at least. You've done something over a marathon distance. So yeah, it's you. Sorry, mate, it's you.
I can't cope with mind games. I feel a bit ill thinking about it. So I'm out.
David, that's great. Thanks so much for your time.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runners World podcast. Thanks very much to our guest, Damien Hall, and to you, of course, for listening.
Subscribe to Runners World magazine today and get 3 issues for just £5. Visit hearstmagazines.co.uk/runnersworldpodcast to get this exclusive listener offer.
The Runners World podcast is available on Acast, iTunes, and all your favourite podcast apps. Just search Runners World UK and click subscribe. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next week. Done.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.